Bush and Blair in Britain. While the U.S. president dines with princes and monarchs and traipses to London to support his closest political ally, Tony Blair, the people of England gather in truly impressive numbers to proclaim their steely opposition to the man who claims to speak for what he calls the free world. From trade unions to anti-nuclear groups to Muslim groups, well over a quarter of a million people filled Trafalgar Square to denounce the Bush-Blair alliance and, in the words of many of the speakers, send a message, "Go home, Bush." Caroline Lucas, a member of the European Parliament Greens, spoke for many when she said, quote, "While Bush may have the support of Tony Blair, he does not have the support of the British people," unquote. Alex Salmond, member of the House of Commons, Scottish National, blasted the disastrous leadership of both Bush and Blair in Iraq. "Half the world fears Bush," he argued, "the other half loathes him." Parliamentarian Lucas argued that the demonstration was the largest single workday protest in London's history. Bush, who often claims to love democracy, went out of his way to avoid the voices of working Britain. He wouldn't even speak to Parliament for fear that some heckler would embarrass the head of the free world. Thus, he attended a few well-staged photo ops. What was largely unseen, however, was the virtual army of cops thrown up as a barrier between him and the people of Britain. The real tragedy is that millions of Americans only received passing glimpses of the vast anti-Bush march in London, with some estimating the number at over 350,000 people, complete with a papier-mâché gilded 15-foot statue of Bush brought down. The average American could only see the ridiculous spectacle of hundreds of reporters stationed to spy the whereabouts of pop star Michael Jackson, but the latest figure in the entertainment masquerading as news in America. Hundreds of thousands of average everyday Britons gathered to protest the coming of an American president. In a nation said to be our closest ally, no less, and it gets 15 seconds of reportage. 3 live hours is dedicated to the possible appearance of Michael Jackson in handcuffs. And yet we wonder why Americans know next to nothing about foreign policy. Jeremy Corbyn, a Labour MP from the House of Commons, dismissed the claim that the marchers were, as the U.S. press is fond of claiming, anti-American. "We send a message to the American people," said Corbyn, "to the 40 million who are without health care. Our message? Stand with us against your government. Stand with us against this ghastly war," he said. Tony Woodley, head of the largest union in Britain called the TNG, called Bush and Blair lunatics and extorted the throng to demand Bush go home several times. In the ill-fated Iraq adventure, the voices of people in the nation said to be the Americans' closest ally bodes ill for its success. The demonstration revealed that the war has not diminished the anti-war sentiment among the British. One wonders, how did the average Turk feel about it? The average French person, the average Saudi, the average citizen of the world? With growing corporate control over the world's media, we may hear and see less of these voices. Yet we cannot deny that they're there, in vast numbers, away from the cameras of capital. Though unseen, they are there, and they are growing. Where are their counterparts among the Americans? From Death Row, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal. These commentaries are produced by Noel Hanrahan for Prison Radio.